There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast here to help inspire more people to discover and love the arts. I'm Ben Eshmade, and this week we're travelling back in our audio archives to May 2018 to Sounds and Visions, a series of 18 concerts and film screenings curated by composer Max Richter and artist Julia Maher.
It's a map of our enthusiasms, this festival. It's the festival we just like to go to.
Over the last few decades, Max Richter's music has been something I've learned to depend upon on record, to relax or inspire. It has moved me in live performance and added depth and weight when I'm watching films on the big and small screen. The Barbican has been one of the places where we've had the opportunity to experience his music being performed by the composer himself on stage, normally directing for the piano, whether with his ensemble or some of the leading orchestras. Sounds and Visions, this curation, was the next natural step in the relationship with the venue, digging deeper into his influences and passions.
You know, it's that sort of kitchen table cup of tea moment, and that's just so fruitful.
Opening eyes and ears to new sounds and visions, this three-day event series included a rare performance of Infra by Max and the 12 Ensemble, Three Worlds from his Wolf Works, and the Chinicate Orchestra with a live performance of his score to Waltz with Bashir. Plus, the curators invited the likes of the London Syrian Ensemble, Colin Stetson's XI, and Caterina Barbieri, and many more to perform across the Barbican, LSO St Luke's, and Milton Court Concert Hall. On the first of two podcasts, I speak to Caitlin Aurelia-Smith.
That it's kind of like gardening, where what can I do to make this, you know, have the best conditions to grow?
And Jaylin.
So before the world hears it, my mother hears everything. That'll never change.
First, I travelled to Oxfordshire to join Max and Julia over tea and some rather nice biscuits at their studio base to discuss, well, everything.
Well, how did we meet? Well, I was playing a concert at the Edinburgh Festival way back at the beginning of Piano Circus. We were playing Steve Reich, six pianos, and Terry Riley in C. And on one of my days off, I went to see sort of, it's like a theatre project, wasn't it, of the Mahabharata, the Indian epic, which was performed by a large number of people in a gym somewhere on the outskirts of Edinburgh. And one of these people kind of caught my eye, and I thought, that's an amazingly beautiful woman playing that character there. And then I went, you know what, you're never going to see her again, so just calm down, you forget about her, you know. And then lo and behold, I did see her again in London. A couple of years later, and in another theatre. And that was it.
Well, I didn't know anything of that at all. I had no idea. I met Max because I thought he was a composer I was going to interview for a job. And so I just interviewed him and he got the job. I was an assistant director at that time at the theatre. It was this amazing space. And so this was part of this amazing kind of experimental theatre space for young people. And so I'd interviewed Max and we sat in the back rows, didn't we, just chatting about life, the world and everything, a lot about art. 26 years later, here we are.
So what was your first collaboration? Was it Sleep or something before then?
Well, we've been working in parallel and joined up in lots of different settings. I mean, I guess it sort of crystallized in the Berlin years, where we had the studio, where there was sort of my studio, Yuli's studio in this building in a factory in Mitte. And then there was a gallery there, and so I was doing music, and there were photographic shows and sort of artwork being made. And then these things sort of slowly started to join up. And I guess even Recompose, we worked together on some of the visual material of that and the design side of it and the ideas. And then Sleep is probably the next step in that process.
Yeah, I was thinking it probably goes back even earlier than that, doesn't it, really? I mean, we had conversations about the Blue Notebooks and Memory House at the very beginning. It's the kitchen table, isn't it? It's talking about, I mean, especially because I'm from Eastern Europe, and that features quite strongly in Max's thoughts about the world and about the journeys of the last century. And my family had incredible journeys across Europe and were refugees. And so I think that whole conversation feeds into your work, doesn't it? And kind of texts that we've both read and are interested in, and writers. And there's always been a back and forth.
Creative work is it's talking, it's having conversations, you know, obviously with your audience, but also, you know, with the people around you. And that's very natural. And Yulia and I have always just sort of, you know, we've sort of always turning things over in our minds, aren't we, one way and another. And it's really part of our process, yeah.
I'm very fiery as a person. And Max has taught me a lot about patience and the long view of art. I'm like, oh, this is terrible, this is good, this is bad, this is straight, you know, big reactions straight away. Max is more like, come on, just see the journey of it. And
you know, a piece of music for me is, it's a narrative form, but it's also a place. You know, you're trying to discover a place in a way. And that for me has always been very important. But, and I guess that's one of the things that, you know, our sort of preoccupations we have in common, which is people and society, art and society, and sort of why art.
Is there a sort of a line between the studio and home, in the sense of you try not to listen to or be influenced by other things in the studio?
Well, I'm not listening to music if I'm writing. No, I'm not. I tend not to do that. Unless it's, I mean, I listen to, you know, Purcell and stuff, but nothing that's remotely sort of on my planet. Yeah, I sort of try to keep away from anything which has got a sort of kinship with what I'm up to, just because it's you know, I mean, writing is really a process of sort of hunting down material, hunting down ideas, and you have to stay sort of quite focused in that state.
I think a lot of people listening will know your music, but maybe don't know Yulia's work as well. So I think it's worth asking, could you maybe describe or pick a piece that we should maybe hunt out to try and understand her perspective, and maybe that guides us through the festival in some way?
Yeah, I mean, Yulia's work isn't easy to summarise. I mean, she's a sort of multi-pronged creature, very sort of diverse in her enthusiasms, but I mean, it's all united by an interest in visual anthropology is the word, is the sort of construct, and that's to do with, you know, how images and people sort of connect in society, and sort of we take meaning from that, and that sort of creative space. In terms of like how it relates to what we've done together, I think the films Yulia made for Sleep are really, I mean, they're amazing, but I think they also talk a lot about your enthusiasms, you know, because the big thing I take from those films is how the people are. And anyone who hasn't seen those, I think, you know, find those really interesting.
We should move to the festival. Where did you start?
dad at the kitchen table again, didn't we? We had a fun time just looking at all the artists that we really like. I mean, it's a map of our enthusiasms, this festival. It's the festival we just like to go to. And so it was really a matter of just sitting down and I mean, we could fill a month. You know, we had a lot of artists. We were shuffling around names and looking at everything they were up to and how they connected. And so, yeah.
And how much did you think about what you would like to perform? You've chosen a few more rarer gems, shall I say?
Yes. I mean, we wanted to play Infra because, you know, I haven't played it that much. And it's a piece which seemed to chime with, you know, the overarching theme of, you know, society and creativity, because the piece is about the London bombings of 7/7 and, you know, the social dimension of that. Also had an opportunity to play it with a larger ensemble, which I was interested in, you know, because normally it's a quintet and we've actually got the 12 ensemble, so it's a bigger band. And then I wanted to play Three Worlds because I haven't played it in London. And that's a piece we've played a couple of times. And it's been a really wonderful experience to play that music, which was, you know, it was written for a ballet, obviously, for Wayne at the Royal Ballet. And to just play that as a musical object was really exciting.
Words, English words, are full of echoes, memories, associations, naturally. They've been out and about on people's lips, in their houses, in the streets, in the fields, for so many centuries. And that is one of the chief difficulties in writing in the day. They're stored with other meanings, with other memories. And they have contracted so many famous marriages in the past. The splendid word incarnadine, for example, who can use that without remembering multitudinous scenes?
There's a lot of free concerts, which I think is a really nice aspect of it. Free screenings as well, yeah. Was that important?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, one of the aspirations of the project really is to try and sort of go beyond boundaries, you know, both in terms of genre and in terms of, yeah, audiences. And of course, you know, to try and be as open as possible. And so, yeah, we've got quite a lot of material available, which is just people can just wander in, you know, which is really cool. You can't encounter things you weren't expecting to encounter unless they just sort of are happening around you. Yeah, it's a very sort of open space, the festival, as much as we can possibly make it. Yeah.
Could you talk about the screenings then?
I mean, so the music part of it, we were really interested in this interdisciplinary conversations. And then I thought, okay, well, I want to do something similar with the screenings. But in a way, people have seen the films around at the moment that are doing that. So I thought, okay, I'm going to delve a bit into the past and go back to 1950s and 1960s when people were doing the same kind of interdisciplinary work and in a very different way, of course. But and so a lot of the films are connected somehow, either through the people working on them. So we have kind of the Charles and Ray Eames doing with Elmer Bernstein, but then Charles and Ray Eames also worked with Herbert Matter, and Herbert Matter did the film about Calder, and Calder's score was done by John Cage, and he also worked with Maya Deren, and Maya Deren's there. So I tried to work it like that. Little map of people who might be working together, and you know, you've got Shirley Clarke and all these kind of people. And then also I put in the Moog film because I thought, you know, not everybody knows about analog synthesizers, and here's a very great film that is a very good introduction to what's going on in that world. And I thought, well, hey, there's so many of these things in the festival that why don't we program this film too? So there are occasional films out there that are slightly different. My favourite film is the Stravinsky film. Have you seen the Stravinsky? Oh, it's fantastic.
But I never am seasick. Never. I am sea drunk. Quite different. For good health.
If he makes a mistake, he has an electric eraser. With for the special ink, so he can erase it with the electric eraser. Then he has something else also electric. We have a lot of electric things.
It's Wolf Koenig and Roman Kreuter, who were working at the National Film Board of Canada, and they were very innovative filmmakers that were working at the forefront of direct cinema that was coming out of Canada at the time. It was very, very fertile ground, and they made this beautiful film about Stravinsky and about the recording of... It's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? It's the recording of Symphony of Psalms, and, you know, the first half of the film is the recording of the Symphony of Psalms, so you get Stravinsky, this maestro, and this orchestra, who's this adulation in the room, and then you get the guys in the box who are trying to record the thing, who are just like tearing their hair out and they're going crazy with the whole, and they don't know how to talk to Stravinsky because he's the master, but oh my god, that was so terrible, that piece, you know. And then you get them on a ship going to, you get him on, he's 18, he's going on a ship to Hamburg, one of his last journeys, and he's talking to Nabokov, who's his, one of his old friends, and they're talking in Russian, and they're talking in Italian, and they're talking in French, and they're talking about the film crew, and they're having a whiskey, and it's just a beautiful film. It's a beautiful film, so yeah. So there's an odd ones like that, just films that I absolutely love as well.
I love to compose the music, which I did already 70 years. More than 70 years. And, you know, I...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I always like to compose music more than the music itself.
And it's interesting because you learnt with Berio and he makes an appearance in one of the concerts. Again, a composer that I don't know a lot about, if I'm right. If I'm honest.
Well, Berio, yeah. Berio is my teacher, sort of post-grad. And Symphonia is an amazing piece. It's, in a way, it's like a giant mashup. There's something very contemporary about it. He takes a whole enormous number of, like, other repertoire works and sort of mashes them together. Mm. It's full of quotations. There's a whole movement about Martin Luther King. It's very political. You know, it's a kind of storytelling, social narrative. It's full of energy. It's a brilliantly made piece of music. And it was very influential to me in terms of, you know, ways of thinking about how, you know, music and stories can sort of impact and connect to society. So I really wanted to include that in the festival. And it's kind of a monster. And if people haven't heard it, I mean, it really does. It will floor you. It's amazing.
It's that difference between hearing something on record and hearing it live. And I think sometimes perhaps the more challenging or the more interesting or deeper works, you have to really first step in that concert hall.
Yeah, I mean, the physical presence of those sounds, you know, and the energy coming off the stage. I mean, it really makes an impact, I think. And you know, recording is, you know, it's a little bit one-dimensional by comparison. Mm.
I'm really looking forward to that programme.
That's going to be an amazing night.
I'm looking forward to the Ives as well.
Yeah, I was going to mention Charles Ives. I mean, of all the composers, he was one that was not appreciated at the time. He was doing something completely, vaguely insane, I suppose, you know, in regards to the clashing of harmonies. But now it sounds so modern.
Yes, Ives, he's a really, you know, when people say, you know, use the word visionary, I mean, that was invented for Charles Ives. I mean, he was a guy working really in pretty much in isolation. And he, you know, developed all kinds of ideas about music, which were, you know, considered to be revolutionary when they were sort of invented, so-called in Vienna, sort of around about the same time. But, you know, here was this guy who was, he really was a sort of an inventor. The unanswered question, which is, you know, you've got three kinds of music coexisting in this space. You know, it's really, really bizarre. You have the kind of the string sort of background radiation and these sort of odd interjections from the winds, and then this sort of really sort of mysterious trumpet motif, which sort of bears no relationship to anything anyone's ever heard before.
Yeah.
And yeah, he wrote this in 1907 or 8. I mean, it's extraordinarily modern in its kind of architectural thinking, everything about it. And then, of course, he, you know, put it in a drawer for 30 years and didn't hear it. I mean, it's an amazing sort of origin story of an amazing piece.
And the last thing on that programme is the Reich.
The Tehillim, yeah. Well, I mean, that piece is, I mean, it's just it's a masterpiece of Reich. I mean, it's extraordinary. We were talking about this earlier, and I was thinking about, you know, I mean, it is a setting of the Psalms, you know. So we're used to the idea of, you know, liturgical music as this kind of solemn, sort of dusty thing, either from the past or, you know, deadly serious 20th century music. I guess the only, you know, going back over the last sort of 20 years or so, the only really notable composer that sort of, you know, made an impact would be Arvo Pärt, whose music is, you know, it's sublime, but it is very, very sort of, in a way, sort of low energy. It's sort of ritual music in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Reich has got, it's sort of really groovy, and it's got sort of ecstaticness, you know, which we just don't have that in religious music.
I love the fact there's this some real burning talents on this bill.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously, Jay Lynn and Caitlin are sort of, you know, come through the last couple of years.
Mm.
Next, I spoke to Caitlin Aurelia Smith.
For me, voice is my main instrument. Even though I'm not a singer, I would never classify myself as a vocalist. But it's the instrument that's always with me. That's where everything starts. Is I always begin with just something that's in my head, and then I sing it, and then I figure out what instrument's gonna have it, what's the notation, where, like, then I create the MIDI, and then I decide, like, where's that gonna go, or I play it on the instrument. But a lot of times when I'm traveling, I just record a lot of different vocal tracks and then figure out where the instruments, like, how they're gonna fit in. Yeah, it really depends. A lesson that I learned and that I'm still learning all the time, and that I hope to always hold on to this lesson, is trying to be objective about what I'm making, so that it's kind of like gardening, where I'm like, what can I do to make this, you know, have the best conditions to grow? So it's less about my personal attachment to it, and then that just makes it more comfortable for when there are moments where it's like, oh no, I have to start all over because it's, you know, it's not going in the right direction. This is a reference that is something that my husband and I have been watching recently, which you might get a kick out of because I guess a lot of Americans are watching it right now, but The Great British Bake Off. I love how the hosts go around and they're like, it's just a cake, don't worry, it's just a cake. And I feel like that's kind of the attitude that I'm hoping to have with creativity, is like be passionate and love it and devoted to it, but also remember that it's just, you know, it's just this piece of music. It's not everything.
Yeah,
You're like a mad magician, for a better phrase, when you're performing live across all the different keyboards and loops and sounds.
I hope I'm not mad. I mean, I love movement. It's been a lot of fun to like think about that each time that I'm making the new live set of like, oh, what are all the gestures? And then it feels like this fun playground to just like learn the language of gestures, which, you know, aren't separate from like the sound being made, but just like, for instance, in the live set currently, I have a foot pedal that does a lot of different things. And so that creates this gesture of like my leg. And then it's a more vertical setup rather than horizontal. So I have like this motion of up and down, and then there's like a cross, and then there's patching, like a lot of patching in the current set. And then I play a lot of the rhythms with my thumb and my feet, and then they're singing. And so there's like a lot of fun gestures to play around with.
Speaking about the upcoming performance at the Barbican, it's an audio-visual performance. Could you talk a little about the visual side of what you'll be doing?
Yeah, I love the visuals for this set so much. My husband made them. He also made the last visuals with another friend. It was a collaboration in the last one. The way that they're working in this live set, they're talking to each other through MIDI, so they're perfectly synced up. That's all I'm going to say.
Finally, Jaylin.
I started at the end of 2007 and started as something I, you know, was trying to do. And then it escalated into something that I actually doing. I took on Planet Mood. It had reached out to me in 2010, late 2010, early 2011 with the track I had done, Erotic Heat, and they wanted it on the compilation Bangs and Works Volume 2. That's kind of how it sparked. I'm talking about, you know, my career-wise with me actually music-wise, just started off just something I was trying. Like, somebody had given me a not-so-legal version of FL Studios, and that's how I started. And it just kind of went from there. The first person who listens to every track I do is my mother. Everything. So before the world hears it, my mother hears everything. So, and it's still the same. It's still that same way. I build everything from scratch. So building everything from scratch like that, it depends. Like, I start in the percussion section. Sometimes it starts with a certain sound, or, you know, or a bell, or, you know, something like that. Like, I love bells, Tibetan bells. I love the hang drum. You know, I love different. I love the marimba. You know, different sounds. Just it all depends. Or sometimes it could be something, the sound of a chainsaw. Like, I have a very, very broad hearing of sound. There are certain tracks, like, it's like a broad perspective of going from like a Carbon 12 or a Blue Eye to like a Guantanamo. Like, for me, you know, it's a very broad, a very change of direction. I think versatility is really important.
narcotic heat.
We're sorry.
This is an emergency.
Let's move on to dance more generally. Before this, you have worked with the Wayne McGregor Company.
Yeah, working with Wayne McGregor, that's family. Wayne accepted me like I was family. Working with him is like you learn so much from Wayne because Wayne has, he's so direct and to the point. I met him at the end of 2016 in Chicago, and we didn't even jump into the work when we first met. We wanted to get to know each other. What is it that you do? What is it that you're looking for? I wasn't starstruck by Wayne, and Wayne wasn't, you know, falling all over me. It was really two artists sat down and said, how are we going to make our worlds merge? I thank him because he allowed me to do something that nobody has ever done before, but he allowed me to express something that I always had inside of me that nobody has ever heard. You'll hear it though in October. He let me like actually score because I knew I could, but I had never done it. So like I wasn't working within, of course, the BPM that I would normally work in, like a 157 or a 155 or, you know, whatever, 161 or whatever. I literally, this was like maybe 119, 110s. You know, I was actually really doing something I had never done. And so, like, the world will get to hear it, you know, soon.
What will you be presenting at the Barbican? Could you tell us more about that?
Nope, I don't talk about that. You just have to show up.
Okay. But it's a new dance piece, can we say that?
Yeah, you could say it's a new dance piece, but I don't talk about it. You just show up and then you can critique it later. No, this is something different. This is something entirely different. This is something that we actually had with a totally different dance. I'll tell you who's involved. If you ever saw my video, Unknown Tongues, Lillian Steiner, she's involved. So I'll say that. This is a totally different thing.
When we return for our second exploration of what was the Sounds and Visions weekend, we speak to director Ari Feldman and Chinookay Orchestra founder Chichi Wanaku about award-winning Israeli animated war documentary Waltz with Bashir.
I think it's much more than all the separate elements you have in it.
I'm Ben Eshmaid. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of the podcast. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.